This week on the eBay for Business podcast.
I was on a couple of weeks ago announcing the Holiday Hustle sweepstakes. Sellers have a chance to win a $200 eBay voucher simply by responding to our question and sharing their tips and tricks. We've had some absolutely fantastic pieces of advice, and sellers have a lot of tips and a lot of great things to share, and they still have plenty of chances to win $200.
Our biggest source of inventory is actually our customers that come through the store with collections that can range from one card to literally a U-Haul of cards. And, you know, we were shut down for 10 weeks. That really changed our sourcing capabilities. Sure, we have, you know, distributors, and sure, we have ways to acquire unopened sealed product, but our business is based on singles. And for 10 weeks, that part was shut down.
I'm Rebecca.
And I'm Griff, and this is the eBay for Business podcast, your weekly source for the information and inspiration you need to start, run, and grow a business on the world's most powerful marketplace. And this
is episode 119. Hi, Griff.
Hi, Rebecca. How are you doing?
I'm doing really well.
I'm afraid to ask, but I will. How was Thanksgiving?
There was a lot of turkey, a lot of food. It was a small Thanksgiving this year, of course, because it was, you know, just immediate family, just the household, but turned out to be a really great day.
Same here. I took out one of my TV dinners and put it in the microwave and put it on a little tray in front of the television, and it was great.
Much less work on the front end and a lot less cleanup on the end.
That's true. That's the introductory holiday out of the way. Now you know what time it is.
It's winter holiday.
Yeah, but it's also selling season on steroids.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So if you're a seller, we hope that you, and you're a listener to the podcast, we hope that you're prepared. You should be. You should have all your shipping supplies. You should have all your inventory. You should have all of the organization in your space set up. You know how your operation's going to run. You've hired help if you need it, and you're ready to meet the rush. So let the fun begin.
It really is the funnest time of year around here on eBay, isn't it, Griff?
Well, it's definitely the most hectic. And of course, as we all like to see, hear the ka-chings, and we like to see the coffers fill up, this is the time of year to do it. And according to the people in the know in the industry, this is a big year for online shopping for many reasons, some of which are obvious.
Yes, I mean, we've seen that all year, and it's certainly going to be true through holiday, we expect.
So best holiday wishes and selling wishes to you all. We have a podcast to do.
We do. So tell us who is on deck this week.
Well, first, we have a very interesting segment. You know Kirsty Dunn.
I do. I know her well.
Yeah. Well, Kirsty's back, and she's going to walk us through some selected seller tips on packaging that were posted on a thread on the eBay for Business Facebook page. We collected the best of the best, and they're really good. There's a thing about pool noodles I never knew. That's coming up.
And I'm here to tell you our featured seller this week is Rob Veris, with one of the biggest trading card companies in the world.
And of course, you and I are going to answer seller questions. We had two this week. But first, let's bring on Kirsty and seller tips on packaging. Recently, the eBay for Business Facebook page team asked sellers to post their top packing tips, and sellers did not disappoint. They gave us a treasure trove of excellent advice when it comes to packing, and also things like packing supplies, organizing your workstation, and the importance of being professional, using professionalism whenever you package. Joining me to go through a selection of these great tips is eBay seller social marketing and communications manager Kirsty Dunn. Welcome back, Kirsty.
Thanks, Griff. Excited to be here.
Yes, I had great fun working with you to package all of these up together, these packing tips, and they're really, some of them are just amazing. But first, can you talk a little bit about the sweepstakes?
Yeah, I was on a couple of weeks ago announcing the Holiday Hustle sweepstakes. We're doing 10 posts. We are 8 posts through already on the Facebook page, and we have 2 more left to go. Sellers have a chance to win a $200 eBay voucher simply by responding to our question and sharing their tips and tricks. And as you said, they have not disappointed at all. We've had some absolutely fantastic pieces of advice and photographs being shared, and it's just gone down really, really well. And we're here to obviously talk about the packing tips in particular. That was definitely the highest engagement rate that we had and the most comments that we had. So it's incredible. I think 136 comments in total on that post in particular. Sellers have a lot of tips and a lot of great things to share, and they still have plenty of chances chances to win $200.
And who doesn't want $200?
Exactly, exactly. You can either use it to self-gift or you can use it to buy a holiday present for somebody else. So good amount of money.
Either way, it's great. Hey, and we've grouped the best comments under four headings. So we're going to talk about the best packaging tips, the best supplies tips, and then there's several tips about organizing your workstation, and finally, the importance of being professional in your shipping and packing. And why don't you and I alternate on reading each of the selected?
Yeah, sounds like a good idea. Love it.
Ladies first, let's start with packaging. This one I really liked. It involves swimming pools.
I know. It's amazing how creative everybody is. But this one I really loved as well. Marilena said that she uses foam pool noodles to ship coffee mugs. She cuts them to the height of the mug. She slits it open on one side, slides over the handle, and then she wraps it in bubble wrap and ships it. A really neat way of using something that is not ordinarily a packaging supply, but using it to keep those coffee mugs safe. I love this one.
Right. And then Karen chimed in with, we use pool noodles for all kinds of items. She says, I sell a lot of vintage bone china and porcelain miniatures, and the noodles are perfect for them. And when shipping bowls, she says she split a section of a noodle and she places it around the rim of the bowl. Plates the same. All kinds of great ways to use packing noodles.
Yeah. And then Desiree, same thing. Pool noodles are great for shipping. They're very versatile, but we mostly use them when shipping framed art. So yeah, another use for them.
Yeah.
She says that they slit them down one side, wrap it around the frame, and then they use shipping plastic or plastic wrap around the face and the back of the artwork. She says that keeps the glass floated safely. And she says they've gotten a lot of compliments about the creativity of their shipping methods, and they haven't had any art arrived damaged. That one is an awesome one.
So word to self, invest in pool noodles. I don't have a swimming pool, but I sell stuff. Lisa said, going on a different topic, she said, when I need a box filler, I create air pillows by blowing up Ziploc bags with a straw and then sealing them with my food saver machine. Super easy, lightweight, and inexpensive. Great tip.
Yeah, that's an awesome one. And then Nancy joined in and said, for every package, I put a layer of crunched newsprint, then bubble wrap the item. And she says that she sells mostly breakable stuff. She says she places it in the middle, then she puts more paper in, snugs it all around, and then puts more paper on top. She just goes the extra mile. She adds a thank you note, which is personally signed. And then she also adds a business card offering a discount on all future purchases. And she says in 1.5 years, she's only had 2 items break. And one of them was a wooden item, which was a freak accident. And so she says that works well for her. So it seems like Nancy really has it sussed out and is going above and beyond to keep her customers happy and to get repeat business as well.
Penny says, I usually ship breakable, so I pack them with the understanding that USPS will drop them, shake them, kick them, throw them, step on them, etc. I don't get angry with the post office employees. I pack my items so they cannot break my stuff. That's being practical, Penny.
Yeah, exactly. Thinking about all eventualities and just making sure they're covered. Love it.
Oh, and this next one you're going to read, I need to take this advice. I actually sold something that broke in transit because I wasn't doing this. Tell us what the next one is.
Got it. So yeah, Tracy says that she protects DVDs and cardboard by making a cardboard slip cover out of free boxes from stores from other recycled boxes. For a regular DVD case, she cuts the cardboard 14x8 and puts the DVD on the edge of the short end of the cardboard, rolls across, bending the cardboard at every edge of the DVD. So all edges are covered. She folds the last inch over to completely enclose it so that every edge is covered. And then she slips it into the packing slip with a nice thank you note. And then she tapes the packing slip on the cardboard before slipping into the bubble mailer. She says this method can be adjusted for CDs, books, and even tapes.
Oh, Tracy, so I should have taken your advice last month when my CD I shipped arrived. The case was cracked beyond belief, and it was just in a bubble mailer. I'm so stupid.
Now you have Tracy's advice, so yeah. That won't happen again.
This next one, I think, will be of interest to people who have a lot of toilet paper dolls. And I thought it was appropriate because, you know, there's a rush on toilet paper, so... Kathy says, use cardboard paper towel or toilet tissue rolls to protect things that fit into them, like the legs and arms of collectible dolls. Perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense. And then Jessica says, when I used to work for an online fulfillment company, the rule was that nothing could move around in the box. And then she says she agrees with everyone that had been saying that as well. So making sure it's packed up and there's no room for the item to move around.
And that's a great rule of thumb. I've been using that one when I'm telling people how to pack. If you can shake the box and you hear something, then it's not packed well enough. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Sean says, pack every package so your 240-pound body can stand on it. I would like to be 240 pounds again, Sean. Thanks. And it makes zero dents in the box. 7,000 plus sales and only one damaged because it looks like a semi ran over a 4-foot long box and it had tire tracks on it. That's a great track record, Sean.
Wow. Yeah, that's incredible. And then Lynn says that she folds clothing and package in a cello bag before packaging. She says the item looks much nicer when your buyer receives it. She says she hates getting clothing that's being tossed into a bag or a box.
Oh, Lynn, I worship at your altar. It's exactly what I do. I sell a lot of shirts, Kirsty. I use Lynn's tip and advice. Fold it nicely, put it in a nice cello bag. It looks like it's new. Buyers just really appreciate that.
Yeah, totally. That makes a lot of sense.
So our next group of tips falls under the heading of supplies. It's about packing supplies. I'll take the first one. Leslie says, overestimate what you need prior to the holidays, especially USPS priority boxes. Oh, Leslie, that's so true. It can take time this time of year to get those supplies shipped, and you have to get them shipped. You can't just walk into the local post office and pick them up. So great bit of advice there.
Yeah, I love that. We have been encouraging sellers to get their shipping supplies in for a good few weeks and months now. Get too much rather than too little.
Exactly.
And then Alyssa says, get a nice box resizer and you can trim down boxes to reduce items' movements inside. And of course, to cut down shipping weight by trimming excess cardboard.
This is a great tip. And if you're selling a lot and it's different sized items, this can make a big difference in your cost because you can cut down on the size of the package and the amount of packing you're going to have to put in.
Yeah, great tip.
And then Clark has a really good bit of advice. He says, my best advice for packing is to know how you're going to ship an item before you list it and make sure you have all of the shipping supplies on hand. There's nothing worse than selling an item during the holiday rush only to find that you don't have a box to ship it in and or it's going to cost more than you thought to ship it because of the box dimensions and weight and you hadn't planned for that. Clark, that's excellent advice.
Yeah, love that one. And then Heather says, reorder packing supplies before you run out. And then she even admits that she really should take her own advice.
Lauren says, my neighbor is a huge online shopper. Most of my boxes come from her. It's nice to have neighbors like that.
Great. Yeah. And it saves on supply costs. That's awesome.
I'm sure she doesn't want to have to keep putting those in the recycle bin. So it's a symbiotic relationship.
Yeah. Win-win for sure. And then Stu says, I buy sheet cardboard and custom make my own boxes.
Ah.
They fit perfectly, reduce packing material, and ships more securely. So it takes less time than filling voids. That makes a lot of sense.
I have to admit, I've never heard of a seller doing this. This is really an interesting tip. Thanks, Stu. And Jenny reminds us, USPS has free priority boxes and envelopes. So those priority boxes that you can get from USPS, you can order them. They're free. Open an account and get them now before it's too late.
Yeah, definitely.
Now, our next group of tips come under the, I call that the organization slash operations for your shipping station. And they're really important. Why don't you start off?
Yeah, I love this one from Amy. Use an ironing board as a packing table for small items. She says the adjustable height will save your back. And that just makes so much sense. I can just imagine households around the US with their ironing boards just packing their items. It just makes so much sense. I love this one.
Yeah, it's a great one. Ankus has a good one. Have a well-organized shipping station. It makes packing very easy. And she also added, and this is controversial, this one, but I'm going to say it anyway. She says, if it ships in a box, add some candy. And then she included a photo of her shipping station, which we'll put in the transcript because it's really organized. But this bit about putting in a bit of candy, that's one of the ones that sellers will agree or disagree with. Some people will say, well, what if the candy melts? What if your buyer's diabetic?
True. Yeah, that right. Could be quite a polarizing one. I personally think it would be a nice little touch for the holidays. It sounds good.
If I couldn't eat the candy because I was diabetic, I'd say, well, it's the thought that counts. Then I'd stop for a minute, take an extra metformin and eat the candy.
So. Love it. Right. And then Jeffrey says that he saves and breaks down all of the boxes he receives in the mail. So he reuses them, he stacks them vertically to optimize storage in the meantime. So really about reusing, recycling. I think we had another comment about the neighbor being the online shopper, but this time this is Jeffrey's own purchases and he's just saving those boxes and reusing them for the future.
You can't be too organized. This one was hard to categorize, but I put it under organization. Raymond says, invest in a gummed tape dispenser. He says, once you've used gum tape, you'll never want to go back to plastic tape. They are pricey new. They're about $325, but you can pick them up on our favorite platform, eBay, used between $100 and $200. The paper tape is stronger. It doesn't peel off in the cold like some plastic tapes can. It's cost effective too, because you don't have to tape a heavy box with a gazillion layers of plastic tape. Oftentimes, commercial auction sites like Graf, just Google it, never heard of it, they're liquidating commercial or industrial spaces, and they'll list them as well. I have 5 of them, all purchased on eBay. He collects them, obviously. Some are over 60 years old, and they're simple machines and practically indestructible. And I have one, and they weigh a ton, those old ones. But yeah, that's a great tip.
Yeah, I love that. And I think I remember a lot of other sellers liked that comment from Raymond. So yeah, great tip, Raymond.
And for a short period of time, I think we were actually in the shipping supply store for eBay supplies. We were providing a big roll of purple tape for a gum tape dispenser. I don't think we are anymore, but we should. We should revisit that. I'll take that back to the shipping team.
You take that one. And then Pam says that she writes box measurements on the outside of the boxes. That way it's easier and quicker to find the right size box. So in her shipping station, if you don't have the correct size eBay branded box, which has the size printed on it. So yeah, she writes them on the outside so she can easily get them and she can get those items out to her buyers quickly.
And then finally, in this category, Heather says, I write a quick item description and the buyer's name on each box. This has ensured I have never mixed up packages to buyers. Oy, yes, that's a great bit of advice.
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
And then, Kirsty, the last category of tips is about professionalism when you're packing and shipping. Why don't you read the first one?
Kathy says, get the eBay thank you stickers. She says, seriously, my feedback has gone up by over 50%, which is awesome. She says she gets glowing feedback. Plus, you're letting the customer know that you appreciate them, which is obviously very important. She uses the stickers that say, thank you for supporting my eBay business. And then she also signs them with a permanent marker with her name. So I love that. It's very nice. A nice touch.
Good work, Kathy. That's promoting your brand. Kim says, I take extra effort to make my parcels look professional. I use the eBay branded boxes. Love that. They're great. And if I have something that is fragile, I will wrap it in bubble wrap and put it in another double box and then add 2 to 4 fragile red stickers on the outside that you purchased on eBay.
Yeah, I love it. And then Darlene touches on something, I guess, that we covered a little bit just before. She says, never ship in food boxes like cereal boxes. Yes. Not only because they are obviously too flimsy and will not protect your item, but she does make a really valid point that your buyer might have a food allergy. Yeah, we don't want to be sending things in food boxes that might have nuts or whatever. Make sure that you take the time to think about that and make your package look professional. So yeah, great tip, Darlene.
Yeah, I heard it from a seller, or I heard a story from a seller in the last year about receiving as a buyer something in a used pizza box.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. I think I saw some comments about people using unused pizza boxes,
yeah, right.
But not a used one.
Yeah. You could make a mistake and think, oh, this must be the pizza I ordered and stick it in the oven. That wouldn't be funny. And finally, on this whole topic, I thought we'd end with a tip from somebody who I know, eBay seller Catherine. She says, pack it like you'd like to receive it. I wrap everything with new tissue and a bow with a handwritten thank you note. I want buyers to be excited to open my packages, and first impressions are always important. Ship fast, ship as promised in the listing, and provide buyers with a wow experience. Well said, Catherine.
That's wonderful.
Those were fun. I learned a few things about pool noodles I didn't know.
I know, exactly. I feel like there's going to be a short supply of pool noodles after this.
Yes. Remind everyone about the sweepstakes, by the way, so that they can take part.
So all of this was part of the Holiday Hustle sweepstakes. 10 posts on our eBay for Business Facebook page asking sellers to share all of their wonderful tips and tricks with other sellers. There will still be two more posts later this week, and then you still have a chance to go back to all of the old posts and enter if you haven't already for a chance to get a $200 eBay gift card.
Right, and you've never visited before, you can see the eBay for Business Facebook page by just going to Facebook and typing in the words eBay for Business. It's the first thing that pops up. Guess what the second thing is that pops up? The podcast group.
The podcast, yay.
Well, I want to thank all of the sellers that submitted those posts. We were really happy to see them, and they made for a wonderful bit of advice here on the podcast. And I want to thank you again, Kirsty. It was great for you to stop by and help share these with us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Griff.
Kirsty Dunn is the eBay Seller Social Marketing and Communications Manager for eBay, and we'll put all of the links that we talked about in the transcript for episode 119. Burbank Sports Cards is the industry's largest volume buyer and seller of sports cards. They're located in Burbank, California, in their 7,500 square foot building, which houses 43 million cards that are all available for sale on eBay. Joining us from Burbank Sports Cards to talk about their business is founder of the business, Rob Veras. Welcome, Rob.
Thank you, Griff. Happy to be here.
43 million cards. I got to tell you, when I first saw that in my mind, I picture the warehouse scene from the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark, you know, when they pull back and show just how enormous the warehouse is, how it's filled with endless boxes of things as far as the eye can see. 43 million cards is a lot of cards. How do you keep them organized?
Well, first and foremost, it's kind of a Dewey Decimal System on steroids. It was built around my mother. She wanted to be able to find cards. And we built a system that was so easy that my mother could find things. And it starts with color coding. We carry a number of different sports, the four key sports, but we also do non-sports, MMA, wrestling. So having things color coded just kind of gets you in the right direction to start. And basically, it's a roadmap. Everything's alphabetical. It's all by year. We can train you in 20 minutes and you can start picking from inventory right away. The organizational map is key, because time is money when you're picking, especially lower end item. And sometimes we have to duplicate. There's maybe 12 different sports as well as non-sports that we handle. But if you know your ABCs and 1-2-3s and colors, we can train you here. So yeah, people get at least 2 out of 3 right.
Yeah, I can remember those from first grade. So I probably could get a job at the warehouse. Now, you sell a wide range of cards of all different types of valuation. What's the most expensive card you've ever sold?
Probably about $40,000. It was a Babe Ruth card that would be worth about $250,000 today. Should have kept that one probably.
Yes.
But the majority of cards that we sell are under $1,000. And most of the stuff we sell on eBay averages about maybe $3 a card.
The question I have about $3 cards is, how do you ship them?
They basically go in bubble mailers and everything's insured. There's no plain white envelopes. You need to have tracking. And the customer expects that, just like any other category. And the way you present with your shipping is very, very important.
So you're not going to scrimp on packing or insurance just because the card's worth $3 instead of $1,000.
Or even 99 cents. Our cards start at that price point. And we get a lot of orders that are for one 99 cent card. And we need to have tracking. It needs to go in a bubble mailer. It needs to be secure within that. And it's just, how would I expect an item to come when I shop e-commerce? And that's kind of the rule of thumb here.
What about insurance? We have in the past mentioned how important it is, even for the smallest home-based business, to have some sort of insurance to protect against loss. And in this case, I'm thinking like fire.
Griff, we don't use that F word in the store.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That is so funny. But no, insurance, and it's not just for catastrophe, especially being in Southern California and prone to the ground moving from time to time. Actually, we have rebar going across the tops of the shelving to kind of keep it where the sway would be minimum between the shelving systems that are 12 feet high. But the big problem that we have is not just the value of the inventory, but the labor to replace it the way it is. And that's another thing that we need to be concerned with. Now, we go over with our insurance provider to make sure that we're covered for, especially as our business scales. So it's not just loss or catastrophe. It's actually the rebuilding and organization of an inventory and the labor that would be involved as well.
How big was your business when you started?
The backstory goes back to 1979. It was a coin and stamp shop, and I used to frequent it because I collected coins and stamps. But during the summer months, I collected sports cards. And it was kind of like a moment when I discovered there's actually price guides for cards. They're actually bought and sold instead of traded. And so about 1980, he let me put a little baseball card section into his coin and stamp shop. And I sold the cards after school and on weekends, and they'd sell the cards during the week and take a 10% cut. And it just scaled from there. And by 1989, the family bought the business, slowly got out of the coins and stamps and everything else that they did, and scaled cards. So I've owned the business for 31 years. It's just grinding every day, buying more things, sourcing more things, building a customer base. And eventually it got to this point. We've never stopped on a daily basis growing the business.
How many cards would you sell in an average day?
The number generally fluctuates between 3,000 and 6,000 cards.
All right. So that's a lot of cards. Takes a lot of employees to pick them and ship them. By the way, how many employees do you have?
I think we have 17 or 18. I think we hired someone 3 days ago. We're looking to hire a couple more because in 2020, you just have to be ready at a moment's notice.
Yeah.
We were caught so off guard in March, and we won't let that happen again. We have a little bit of runway to ramp up. So right now, about 18 people that all have specific jobs. Scanning. I mean, it's one of those things you don't always think about. But when you have 2.6 million different listings that have to have a picture to be on the platform, that's a big part of the process as well that we're always hiring for.
So you use a scanner for the cards?
We have a flatbed scanner for the thicker cards, and we have a high-speed scanners. We have multiple ones, actually, that can do about 40 cards a minute, front, back, auto crop. That technology is off the shelf. I didn't know that 10 years ago, but it's a Fujitsu 6130Z scanner. It changed everything in the store.
All right. And I'm going to put a link to that scanner for anyone who's listening and is interested. I'll find some links, hopefully on eBay. That's a fast scanner.
It's very fast. I found it on a late night infomercial where it's a document scanner and you could do IDs, business cards, 8x11 paper documents. And I'm like, that might work for cards. And it was that moment where I'm like, oh my God. And it was like a $900 machine. And I bought one and I'm like, I cannot believe what is happening in front of my eyes. And I bought 9 of them. We basically hired a small army because we had no images that were big enough to, because eBay changed their image requirements and we didn't have any images that fit those requirements.
Oh, so you had to do the whole inventory.
Yeah, we started at point A. And we got to point Z, and now we're 99.6% scanned. And the only images we really need is just for new inventory that comes in.
Without giving away actual sources, we know we never expect anyone to do that. What is sourcing like for you during the last 8 months?
It's changed, obviously. Our biggest source of inventory is actually our customers that come through the store with collections that can range from one card to literally a U-Haul of cards. And, you know, we were shut down for 10 weeks. That really changed our sourcing capabilities. Sure, we have distributors and sure we have ways to acquire unopened sealed product, but our business is based on singles for anyone that goes on our site. And for 10 weeks, that part was shut down. Since we've reopened with lessened capacity, we have been able to start sourcing again. And our industry has ramped up to such a level now in the COVID age that more and more product is available right now as consumers consume and want to resell things. We've had a tremendous amount of sourcing and that can change in a heartbeat. So we need to have plans above and beyond that for sourcing. We're working on that.
The pandemic will end someday, hopefully sooner than later. Will this have changed the way you do business forever or is it back to pre-pandemic operations?
No, I don't think any industry can say that business is going back to normal. You know, there's such an emphasis now on servicing the consumer in a safe way. Obviously, online sales overnight. Well, the problem that we had, and I think you'll agree with this, Griff, is that everything shut down in a heartbeat. When we had steady sales, eBay was predictable for us. We knew the sales volume. But when things double within the course of a couple of days, volume wise, and you're not allowed to have employees in your building, and you start doing that math in the backup. We're used to 24 to 36 hour turnarounds here. And with our volume, we're like 99.9%, sometimes 100%. And all of a sudden, you're 6 days out, you're 12 days out. And from eBay, they said, Rob, don't worry, just stay safe. Protections are in place for our valued ratings. But the math wasn't good. We were able to sneak a few guys in here while we were dark, but they were overwhelmed. And it just April, May, June, July were just record-breaking months. When we thought it was end of days, you know, we didn't know what was going to happen. And basically, now that we see the changes that have taken place, it's never going to be business as usual ever again here. Yeah. People are so in tune with e-commerce now that just the simplest thing they would have gone to our shop for, now they're ordering online. And online pickup is now a huge part of our business as well.
How does that work? Is this at the warehouse?
Yes. With our different platforms for selling, we have in-store pickup shipping options. It's a necessity. And it all goes back to free shipping. On the eBay platform, we have $30 free shipping and handling. And landed pricing is so important now as people, you know, might be on more of a budget but want to buy more things online. If we sold every card and attached $3.50 or $4 to it, now you're spending $5 on a card. But if they could put it in a shopping cart and be able to buy 20 different items and pay no shipping when normally they pay $80 buying from different vendors, our selection plays a huge role in that, our branding. And once they have that first experience and they get the packaging, they realize, you know, that Burbank is a great resource for that. And that goes the same thing for in-store pickup, where 24 hours later, you have an email, come on by, pick up your cards. You don't physically need to be in our storefront. And I think a lot of small businesses will adapt to that model as well going forward.
Do people drive up and then they park in a special place and one of the employees runs out with a little bag saying, here's your cards?
Yeah, that's definitely an option here. And a lot of people just prefer to have it shipped to their home, just don't want to go out in general. We understand it. I mean, you know, we have things at home. We can't bring that stuff home. I can't bring it in the store. Knock on wood.
Yes.
We've been safe and, you know, everything's been okay, but you need to have contingency plans in place. And we've had a lot of time to think about this. So our business has changed forever. And I think it's going to be for the positive coming out of this and rediscovering the technology that's been there that we need to take better advantage of.
Okay, so 43 million cards and several thousand cards a day. What about future growth? Do you have plans for growing? And if so, what are the goals for 2021 and beyond?
I've been real fortunate. We're a three-generation family here in the business. My son's 25. I call him my exit strategy. He's going to be the man in this industry. He's incredible. And going forward, I have someone that's far more tech-savvy than myself, someone that totally gets the social media. It's a tremendous resource for us. I do a morning podcast, not just trying to sell anybody anything, but actually the state of the industry. I'm trying to educate people. It's been a huge boon to us that Rob's not trying to sell you things. He's trying to educate you,
sure,
promote the industry. What's on my mind at that very moment? That's going to continue. We built a brand new website based around social media. And that's very exciting. We have big plans, whether it's in the physical footprint of our store, online. eBay has just been tremendous to us. Starting out, and eBay was this ivory tower that, you know, we didn't have access to hardly anybody there. It was hard. And now eBay's been so open with how to do things and has grown my business in ways I never dreamed possible. 2021, I just think, is going to be absolutely incredible from a digital standpoint. I think we'll be able to rebuild the showroom and that store traffic as well and really amplify our business going forward.
I don't think it's impossible given the growth that you've done. I love the idea that part of your growth plan is handing off the business to your son. By the way, what's his name?
His name's Ryan. He's 25. I've ceded most control of the business to him. He's got the perfect skill set of business and the collectibles business in general. I'm 54 now, and it's always a concern in any business. What's the succession plan? What's going to happen? Is my wife going to look at this and say, I don't want this. I just want to sell it. And for pennies on the dollar, I don't have to worry about that anymore. You know, my father was my partner here for years. Tremendous businessman. Didn't know cards. So we had this great thing where he had his lane, I had mine. And now my son comes in. He's like the best of both of us. And I'm super excited about that. And the customers love him.
We'll have to have Ryan. Left up Ryan on the next podcast. Rob, you're retired. We're going to talk to your son from here on.
I get that a lot these days. I'm like, I'm the OG. I'm like, the, you know, just I'm kind of the past. And he's certainly the future. And it's very bright. I'm super excited. There's nothing better than bringing your son into your family business and seeing his passion for it and watching it grow from there. Run with it, Ryan. It's yours.
We usually ask our guests, what would be their word of advice for someone who isn't doing that well? Their sales are slow. What would you tell them if they came to you and said, hey, you got this successful business. I wish I was this successful. What do you advise?
Focus on the customer experience. Your passion should drive you. eBay's the home of the passion categories, and you need to project your brand And you'll never have a tougher boss than yourself. I'm here 12 hours a day. Do I need to be here 12 hours a day? No, probably not. I got 18 people here, but it's my passion. It's what I do. And I don't want to work in a shoe store or in a factory. And I'm blessed to do what I do every single day. And I acknowledge that every morning and I wake up, and every day holds new potentials, new customers, new sourcing. It should excite you, and you should want to grow. You should take advantage of social media. You should take advantage of a platform that attracts users at such an accelerated rate. It's the best platform on earth. Listen to these podcasts. I didn't know they existed, and I just went down the rabbit hole. I'm like, these people are brilliant, especially with the eBay staff. They're so open and accommodating.
You mentioned that you actually do a podcast. Where can we find that?
On my Instagram, which is Burbank Cards. Every morning, it's about 10 minutes where I speak on the industry, speak on my business, speak on my experiences, some of the crazy things. I've been on the Today Show. I bought a collection from Hawaii that had 12 million cards.
Jeez.
It took 3 40-foot storage containers to get back. It cost me $30,000 just to get the collection back to my building. We buy cards at a velocity that's hard to imagine. And Instagram's given me this audience that is incredible, and it's growing exponentially.
Well, Rob, I want to thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to talk to us.
Griff, pleasure. We'll talk soon.
Burbank Sports Cards is the industry's largest volume buyer of seller of sports cards, and we've been talking to Burbank Sports Cards founder, Rob Varis. Now, we will put the links to every single one of the sites that we mentioned, even if we didn't mention the link, in the episode transcript for episode 119. Make sure you go to www.ebay.com/podcast, look for that episode, and then click the link for transcript.
It's time for You've Got Questions.
We got answers. You see how I changed that up?
I did. I went first this time.
Yay! And before you ask, yes, we do have questions, Rebecca. We do.
All right. What's up first?
Well, our first question was called into our hotline at 888-723-4630 by Libby. Let's listen.
Hi, this is Libby at Conchi Consignment. And I want to thank you for an awesome podcast. I'm an avid weekly listener and appreciate all the information you guys provide. I have a question about last week's shipping update. It was mentioned that Saturday and Sunday could be added into our shipping preferences as working days to kind of give us a leg up if we do work weekends. Does this count when shipping via the United States Postal Service, since there is no Sunday pickup? So just wondering what the right thing to do with our accounts is there and if it has any effect. Appreciate it, and I think this update is great. Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Libby. And I have good news. As a seller, you can select either Saturday or Sunday to add to the days that you ship, and you can select a cutoff time for each day. You don't have to select both, though.
That's correct. It's pretty much the same as it is for the rest of the week. So, Libby, as examples, if you offer same-day shipping, but you only ship by USPS, and you can ship on Saturday but not Sunday because USPS will pick up on Saturday or you can drop off, then just don't select Sunday as a working day. If you offer one business day handling and you can ship on Saturday, then select Saturday as a business day and you'll be expected to ship on your next business day, which, because you didn't select Sunday, would be Monday.
All right, that sounds pretty simple. We should also point out that the cutoff times you select for same-day shipping will only apply to those listings where your shipping policy states same-day shipping. Otherwise, your shipping time is set by your handling time for those listings.
Yeah, and that's important because I think if you're looking at the cutoff page where you can set these settings, you see that you can set cutoff times. But again, as Rebecca just said, those are only going to apply for listings where you say same-day shipping. And you may have more policies than one. And some listings you will ship same day, some you won't. So, Libby, you can set your working days, including weekend days, by going to the link that we're going to give you. It's ebay.com/ship/cutoff, and we'll put that link in the transcript for episode 119. Our next question was sent in to podcast@ebay.com by Ralph. And Ralph's not happy. Would you like to do the honors, Rebecca?
Sure, I'm willing. Ralph writes to us, "My customer was sent the wrong item. I corrected it and replaced it with the correct item. He sent the first one back, and now you," meaning us here at eBay, "are forcing me to issue a refund. I, and others I have talked to as well, have no way of contacting you to resolve this kind of issue. Is there a way to do this? The customer is now happy, and he is a regular, but this seller is not happy. Ralph.
Mm.
Thanks, Ralph. I think we can help with this one. Griff?
Yeah, you're right. So, Ralph, I'm pretty sure that the issue was, because of the way it sounds in your email, you refunded the buyer outside of the return process by sending them a replacement after the buyer opened a return case. Now, or sent you an email asking, what are you going to do about this? Now, it's good. I want to state this right up front. It's good that you took care of the buyer. We appreciate that. But unless you offered the option for exchange or replacement in the listing's return policy, there is really no way for eBay to know that that's what you actually did to make it right for the buyer. We don't know if you shipped the item. There's no place outside of the process where you can upload a tracking to show that. So that was the issue here.
Okay, so all that given, what should Ralph do? The buyer is happy, again, which is great, but eBay's asking Ralph to do this refund.
Yeah, he shouldn't refund, obviously, but what he should do is he should go to the return case, and not through email, just go to the return case on eBay and use the message option inside of the return process to send a message to the buyer indicating that, well, the buyer asked for a replacement, which you have sent. That's basically for eBay's information, and then ask the buyer to close the return case.
That's it?
Yeah, that's it. That's the fastest way to close the case. It's much faster than waiting to get a response from customer support or to call them. If you do this, there will be a record of the seller's response to the return request, and the buyer should have no issues with closing the case. They got their replacement item. But you need to send that request through the return process flow, and you need to do it immediately. And in fact, you may have missed the window to do so, and the buyer could escalate the case to eBay. Now, they're not going to do so, but you want to get this taken care of. So that's the right way to do it. Go into the return process and send the buyer a message asking them to close the case.
In the future, what should a seller like Ralph do to prevent this?
Well, Rebecca, we covered this in a recent podcast. Maybe Ralph missed it. If you are willing and able to provide the option for an exchange or a replacement to a buyer for a listing, and that buyer might want to return an item, you have to select that option in your return policy. It's a box that you check, and it says exchange or replacement. Then it's up to the buyer to select that option.
And then, of course, you want to make sure that you are sending the right item to the buyer.
Well, yes. I mean, as someone who's done that before, I can tell you that that's the real learning here. Make sure that your operations are set up so they're more fail-safe, that you won't end up sending the wrong item to the buyer. Those are our questions for the week. That's all we got.
Those are pretty good ones. So if anyone out there also has a question for us here at the eBay for Business podcast, why not call us at 888-723-4630.
888-723-4630. We love to hear your voice. And if you're not a call on the phone person, that is, you're a very shy person like me, then you always can email us at podcast@ebay.com. That's podcast@ebay.com. Make sure you include as much information as possible. Now, before we go, here's your daily podcast to-do list.
As always, check the announcement board for up-to-date seller news.
And don't miss out on your chance to win a $200 eBay gift card through the Holiday Hustle sweepstakes. You have about two more chances to post, either on December 2nd or December 4th. We'll put the link to the entry instructions in the transcript for episode 119.
And of course, always check out the transcript for this and all episodes for follow-up on what you've heard, and to see the links we referenced during the episode.
On our next episode, number 120, we'll meet with eBay seller Linda Lightman of Linda's Stuff.
And we'd like to thank again our guests for this week, eBay seller, social marketing and communications manager, Christy Dunn, and eBay seller, Rob Veras.
The eBay for Business podcast is produced and distributed by Libsyn and Podcast 411.